I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into a new episode of The Memo on this Wednesday, the last day of November, the 30th of November.
There's 31 days in November.
Pretty sure you're wrong about that.
Just wanted to see how far you'd go before you'd be like, oh, yeah, there is.
No. Yeah. There's not. I know. I don't know a lot, but I know how many days are in a month. I also know it's...
I like that that's your threshold. I don't know much, but I know how many days are in a month because of that song.
Exactly. If it weren't for that song, I'd be like, I don't know.
Does anybody know that off the top of their head without doing that song? Like, is anybody automatic? I mean, there's some months you automatic. Like,
I don't even know the song that well.
Yeah, I don't know the song. I do the knuckles.
30 days the have knuckles. September, April, June, and November. All the rest have 31, except February, and then it quits rhyming. I never learned the knuckles.
The knuckles.
It's easy.
Yeah. The kids used to do it in school, and I was like, you're stupid.
It's just, I guess it works because it alternates
itself. Oh, wait. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
But you just line up your knuckles together.
I've seen that before.
And anytime that there's a knuckle is a 31 month, and then a indent is a 28.
Between the knuckles?
Between the knuckles.
We call them non-knuckles.
Non-knuckles.
What if you don't have but like nine fingers? I know a guy named Bob.
Learn the song.
I know a guy named Bob, works for Mississippi State. He's got nine fingers, and he jokes about it all the time, so I feel like I can too. So I don't think that would work for him.
He'd have to learn the song.
Yeah.
Or just pretend.
Bob would have to learn the song. Hi, Bob. I haven't talked to Bob in a while. Good kid. So, yes, I know my days of the month, and I know that it's 2 days till my birthday.
Nobody cares.
If anybody would like to send gifts,
Are you going to do a Facebook Live on your birthday?
Memo@journalink.com.
Do you just feel the need to be in front of a camera at all times now?
Or you can just send your gifts to 12 to 42 South Green Street.
I saw in the middle of a tornado last night. You went live.
Yeah, I did a little Facebook Live for the first time last night outside the Journal.
Why?
Because I was bored because I couldn't do anything with what I needed because we were waiting for the storm to pass before we recorded
something. A lot of excuses here right now.
So I went out there and got some shots of the rain and the lightning and whatnot.
Yeah.
It wasn't that great.
It struck you. Look at your hair.
Yeah, you like that?
I can't take that joke. That was Chris Kiefer's. But
about my hair?
I will borrow it.
Gold.
Yeah.
For people who can't see because this is a podcast.
Just stick your finger in an electrical socket and you'll get the same sensation.
Like
I could make it spikier if you want. I could do the whole all over.
Like Alfalfa and Spanky and the Little Rascals, whenever they'd see a ghost, their hair would just go up and stay that way. Little Rascals was a TV show.
No, I've seen it.
Okay.
It's been a while, but I've seen it. Sure.
If Emma was in here, I'd have to.
Emma would have no. Emma will be in here later.
She will. I won't make a Little Rascals joke, though.
Emma Kent will be here. Jenna Parsons will be here. Caleb Bedillion will be here.
She always makes me feel so old.
She does. She's still only like 22. She's been out of school for like a year. She's one of those super smart, overachieving kids, I guess.
She's a fantastic person. She's the best.
She is.
But
she makes us feel old. And you're not even that old, but she makes you feel old.
I told her one day she reminded me of Mary Tyler Moore, and she said, who? And that's just a generational. That's a hard word to say.
It is.
That's a generational thing. That's not a lack of knowledge. Well, I guess it is a lack of knowledge.
Well, you know,
I'll rethink
some
all
people.
This.
Some kids, I have a friend. She's probably in her mid-20s, but she's like really into like Buster Keaton and all these old movies. So like, she's got knowledge of stuff way before her generation, like two or three generations before.
Yeah.
But then you have other people just they just keep up with the current stuff and that's it, and that's fine. You know, it's just, I think it's interesting to see how different people consume different parts of pop culture from different eras.
I think it'd be an interesting thing to see, like Chris and my generation that had access to Nick at Night, that we had instant access to that thing.
I didn't have cable, so I never got to see Nick at Night.
Okay, well, you're also older, so you're expected to know some things.
Yeah, well.
Old man. How old are you going to be in 2 days?
I'll be 41.
Good gosh, you're ancient.
Yes.
You're just falling apart before our very eyes.
Pretty much.
Last time you had a birthday, you nearly died.
In
the course
died.
Of like 3 weeks, she blew out a hip and
no, I got the what do you call them,
shingles?
I got shingles. I don't remember what else probably happened.
You,
probably
you
something.
Blew a hip or something.
I didn't blow a hip.
You did something like to your knee or you were limping for a few weeks.
Was I? Because I remember as soon as I got over the shingles, I was able to play church basketball again, like in January.
Something so happened. I didn't have, Do you not remember?
Now the year, now the previous basketball season, I had a, like a little stress fracture in my foot. No,
this was all right after the birthday. You like within the course of 10 days.
It does seem like something happened. I just can't remember.
I thought I remember you missing basketball because you had like a back injury or something. But
well, it's possible. I've had a recurring bulging disc.
It was like 40 and bulging disc. That's what it was.
That's probably what it was.
Yeah, it was like 40 and bam, he's dead. Well, he's picking out coffins already.
My,
did you just wink at me when I said that?
No, my eyes.
Why did you with one eye? You just winked at me.
I was about to talk about my cataract, since people love to hear folks talk about what's wrong with them. You know, I think my second cataract is coming in. My dad just had cataract.
Bradley, we're going live at 4 p.m. on Facebook if you want to learn more about his cataract.
My dad is 74, just had cataract surgery on both eyes. I'm 41. I'm going to need them pretty soon.
Speaking of your father, I just want to take a moment here. We make light of Brad a lot because we love him. But but Brad Locke does love his selfies more than anything. Probably more than his children, I'd say he loves selfies. Is that a fair assumption?
You know.
Yeah, he loves it more than this. And over Thanksgiving, you were helping your father mend a fence.
Yes, I was.
Yeah. But first, let me take a selfie. Your father is hunched over in the background, 74 years old, repairing this fence.
He's in great shape.
You're doing blue steel with your iPhone.
I was holding the fence up.
Yeah.
I was. I was holding it up against the post. I was like, well, might as well take a picture.
Oh, God.
And Dad was down there doing the, he's hammering the...
I say once again, the only time you got up in arms over the recent presidential election is when you found out you could not take a selfie in the booth.
Which I did anyway.
Oh, yeah. He's right here. Come on in. We're waving the FBI in now.
I voted again yesterday, too. How about that?
Yeah, good for you.
Turnout was a little bit lower.
A little.
Just a little.
Just a tad. It was raining.
Yeah, it was. But I went in at lunch, and I was like voter 116. When I went in at lunch on November 8th, I was like voter, gosh, what was I? It was like, it seemed like I was 700-something. Yeah. But, it was just a state Supreme Court race that Bobby Chamberlain won, by the way. A little bit of news there for you.
Yeah.
We do have news on here sometimes.
Sometimes. You
know, sometimes. We're not talking about Brad's selfies.
Yeah. And like
I was just impressed. Your poor father was just down there.
Listen, I don't really know how to mend a fence. He's just like, here, hold this up. I'm like, okay, I'll hold it up. You hammer in the hooks or the
Dad,
whatever
can I
you call
take
them.
A selfie? Sure, I don't give a crap. Thanks, Dad.
It was nice, though, to get out back onto the farm. Out in College Hill.
With all the miracles of technology taken with you.
Got to romp through mud and try to avoid cow pies and, got me back to nature.
Surprised you didn't Facebook Live it.
I should have.
We're here mending a fence.
I should have. I scared a cow. That was fun.
Did you?
Yeah, he was approaching me. It wasn't a big cow.
Yeah.
It was still coming in. It was a...
So you scare people out of livestock.
It was still a calf or whatever you call it. A not fully grown cow. Obviously, I did not grow up on the farm.
Calf?
A calf, yeah. It started to approach me getting all bold
and
stuff.
Brad, that was a horse.
So I scared him off. And cows are easily scared, though.
Why did you scare him off?
Because he was approaching me.
What? He wasn't going to do anything
No,
to you.
But I figured he looked like he was still small enough that maybe...
I mean, the worst he could have done is lick your hair, and it looked the same, probably.
He looked like he was still small enough that maybe his mama was nearby, and you don't want to get between... A calf and the mama cow.
Okay.
My mom made that mistake when she was little and run over. So you got to be careful.
I was glad to see you snapping selfies in your own time there.
It was fun.
Yeah. Good. Tell them what we got on today's show.
We've got Emma Kent coming on to talk about this reading initiative, statewide reading initiative.
Let's think of a really obscure reference to run by her and see if she gets it.
We'll do that.
Like Dragnet or something.
Caleb Bedillion, also a young person. Not quite as young as Emma.
Whippersnappers.
He's coming on today to talk about...
take a deep breath.
What is he talking
Brad.
About? Oh, he's talking about the...
Bicentennial flag.
The Bicentennial, that whole controversy. Mm-hmm. Not going to fly the state flag in front of the new police station. Going to fly the Bicentennial flag. You'll probably be shocked if you go to the D-Journal Facebook page where I posted the story about that yesterday evening. Lots of opinions.
No.
Yes, people have lots of hot takes
on
this issue. Yeah, some very passionate opinions, yes. I know, right? No. Go figure.
People
so Caleb will offer his cool-headed objective analysis of that, because you won't get that on Facebook. And also we'll have Jenna Parsons, of course, to talk about food.
Mm. She didn't bring any.
Bet she didn't.
I checked this morning.
Hey, today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods. Formerly known as Palmer's, the locally owned grocery store still offers high quality selection, great customer service, and low prices. Visit Shoppers Value Foods on East Main. Let's do a show.
Okay.
We now welcome Emma Kent into the program. How's it going, Emma?
It's going.
You enjoy your time in the little storm shelter last night?
Sort of.
Emma was telling us about, you know, we had some bad weather come through last night.
Did we? I couldn't tell from your Facebook Live.
If you watched my Facebook Live, you would know that it was raining pretty hard.
I mean, there's windows or there's Brad Locke watching it.
Just trying to offer some commentary, some insight, because, you know, I'm a licensed meteorologist.
Are you?
No. And so Emma and her husband Jacob, they got a little storm shelter there. It's been at that house you live in.
House I live in, yeah. My house? Well,
you mean her home?
Your house. Sorry. The house you're squatting in. It's not really your house. No, your house.
Would you like to start over?
What?
No. The storm shelter's been there since a long time.
Since a long time, yes.
The storm shelter's been there a while.
Yeah, it's really old. It's been there since, I'm not sure if they built it when the house was built, but it's been there for a while.
Yeah, so.
And no one's used it in a long time.
Yeah, that was apparent when you went down there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, fun times though.
Brad, what kind of product do you use in your hair?
What doesn't he use is the more accurate answer.
I think it's Old Spice something or other, some kind of paste, I don't know. Because my hair is so thick, if I don't use something, it just it looks like a Q-tip head. That's what it looks like. Just all poofy.
Okay. So, I was just curious.
Yeah. Anyway. Oh, there's $1 in the anyway jar. Emma had to put one in the anyway jar last week.
I didn't, actually.
She said anyway. Don't touch my hair, Derek. I'm trying to do an interview here. This is serious stuff. Let's talk about this reading initiative. I mean, we knew about it a few days ago, I guess, but it's been officially announced. They announced this campaign for grade-level reading, and we had a main story. Then you had, a secondary story about Oxford and Lafayette County, who are kind of already examples of how this can work. What does this initiative entail, exactly?
So it's kind of interesting because it's called an initiative, but it's really just like a push to focus on literacy. I mean, it's not, you know, a new group of people or anything kind of being formed. It's the goal of it is to take, so communities can become campaign for grade level reading communities.
Right.
Basically, that means that they want to encourage programs that promote literacy in those communities. And then they also want to get all of those groups and those people who care about literacy to pool their resources together.
Right.
Instead of acting so separately.
Right.
So it's more like trying to encourage those programs and communities and then kind of make them into little coalitions.
Yeah.
So communities, the whole statewide initiative is aimed at getting, I think, 10 more communities in the state to become these campaign for grade level reading communities.
And there's focus on like school readiness, attendance, summer learning, and then third grade reading.
Right.
And so Oxford and Lafayette County, as far as your story, I know they've really kind of honed in on the attendance part for sure.
At the school districts they have. And then they have some other programs, and a lot of that is in partnership with Ole Miss that encourage, you know, summer learning or just different reading programs for kids. And so Oxford and Lafayette County are already designated a campaign for grade level reading community. And they have been, I think, I don't know exactly when it was, but I mean, recently they've kind of gotten it off the ground.
Yeah.
And then Gulfport has been one for several years. So it'll be, you know, those are places that people can look and say, okay, what are they doing and how can we do that in our community kind of as they move forward?
Yeah, you mentioned the University of Mississippi. There's one program called Horizons for at-risk youth to do some, take some summer classes. If you've got reading as fundamental, help schools get free books to first grade students at the end of the school year. So, I mean, I guess basically they're kind of ahead of the game a little bit as far as this whole initiative or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I mean, because they've already said this is something we're going to do. But a lot of, you know, I would say a lot of our communities, like even Tupelo, I mean, it wouldn't be that hard for them to do the same thing. I mean, we've got programs, you know, literacy programs. I'm trying to think of a few off the top of my head. I mean, we do like the Imagination Library, where the kids get a book every month in the mail. And then the Somersault reading camp that they do at the orchard. Yeah. I mean, stuff like, it's basically all about those kind of things coming together to form this greater focus and kind of really push this. So, I mean, a lot of communities across the state probably already have things like this going on. It'll just be a matter of saying, yeah, we want to go a step further. So, I mean, Tupelo, I think, could do it. I think lots of places could do it.
Gray Tolleson, he's the Senate House Education Committee chairman. He's from Oxford. He said he'd like to see some more communities involved, including Tupelo. I mean, so do we know about who else may jump on board in the area?
I think it's probably too early to say really who else is going to do it. But he did mention, you know, kind of like I said, in places where you've already got some programs started, like Tupelo, like New Albany and Corinth, some places like that. I mean, and anywhere where you've got people who are working towards making literacy a big focus, you're going to be able to hopefully get into this pretty easy.
Cool. Well, that story's in today's journal. I want to switch gears a little bit, talk about a story you had back over the weekend about Shannon High School, and they've made some big strides looking at their graduation rate. In 2015, it was 56.6%. 2016, 78.3%. That's a huge jump. And part of the success is what this freshman academy they have.
And that's, it's kind of just really like the name for keeping the freshmen together and kind of in their own little freshman world. So they can stay focused and so they can really get off to a good start when they come to high school, because you don't want to fall behind early. Because then it makes it harder to catch up, and inevitably kids who get behind are going to drop out. So,
I mean, what else have they done to try to really bring up this graduation rate? And I guess the school's overall grade has gone up too, hasn't it?
Yeah. They were a D for several years, and they've gone up to a C. And it is interesting, you know, this year with the new accountability model, a lot of schools fell, and Shannon still came up. And part of that has to do with the model focuses on growth in students. Yeah. And so if you've got some kids who are already coming in behind and they grow, you're going to get more points. But so I think it is, you know, a D to a C, it's just one letter grade. It doesn't seem like a huge jump, but I think for them, it's really been just a big morale boost. Just negative. There's negative perceptions about certain schools. And and from what I heard in doing this story, there's been a good shift in perspective.
And at the top of the story, you said, you know, the basically it boils down to hard work, and there's, you know, an after school tutoring program. And it looks like just the teachers and administrators just putting in a lot more effort.
I think better attitude just in general from the administration. And then I spoke to both the principal Bill Rosenthal and then Jimmy Weeks, the superintendent of Lee County Schools. And they both said that there were a lot of discipline issues that were distracting from academics, you know, a couple years ago. And so they've really tried to work on those, and that's helped, obviously. You know, definitely you can see that. And then, they've also just really tried to crack down on helping kids grow and using the data that they have. And, a lot of individual one-on-one kind of help for kids who need it, pulling them out of class, giving them extra one-on-one time. And, you know, it's just surely a lot more work for the students and administration, but I guess it's paying off.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's cool to see. That's cool to see. Good story there. Emma, y'all can find that one in Sunday's Journal or at djournal.com. Emma, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Hey, be sure to check out the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with myself, Gene Phelps, and Blake Morgan. You can find new episodes every Wednesday. So we'll have a new episode this afternoon. Actually, we'll just be Blake and myself. Gene will be on assignment, but you can listen to it for free in iTunes, your podcast apps. We're at preprally.djournal.com, and today we will be previewing the state football championships coming up this weekend in Starkville. And Ole Miss and MSU fans, check out the Double Coverage podcast. Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Alford and MSU reporter Logan Lowry release a new episode each Thursday afternoon, in which they provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and the Rebels. Listen to it for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com.
Or you can start your morning with the Brad Locke Show each 7 a.m. That doesn't make any sense. Each Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. You can watch that on djournal.com, Facebook, YouTube, or the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Apple or Android devices. It is a quick bit of news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a 5-minute video. If you want more extensive weather, you can watch Brad's Facebook for his Facebook Live channel that he's been doing. Some great work over there, Brad, by the way. Just fantastic stuff. Caleb Bedillion joining us on this Wednesday. Caleb yawning a little bit. How are we, Caleb?
We are well, I think.
The royal we. We had a late night last night.
I don't know
time,
I mean, if we includes you. No, I guess it does I have not. To ask no. you as well. I'm are not. We well?
I'm not. I've never.
Brad, are we well?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Look at his hair. He's not well. You had a late night last night with the election results coming in from the runoff.
Yes.
You looked at me like I was an idiot there for a second.
Several counties were a little slow due to.
No.
Due to bad weather. Etowamba didn't count at all. They're counting today.
Well, they got the roof blown off and docks are gone. Our thoughts are with Etowamba County today. However, you're here today to discuss yet another flag issue for the city of Tupelo, this time in the favor of some who wish to not see the state flag flown at the new police headquarters. We'll be flying the bicentennial flag instead.
Banner.
Bicentennial banner. It's not a flag.
I'm just being funny. I mean, yes, the Mississippi Economic Commission designed the bicentennial banner. And from what I understand, they've been rather insistent that it is, in fact, a banner, not a flag.
Well, now, there's deciding factors to that. Banners are usually vinyl. They're not cloth. Is it cloth? Because banners cloth. Are cloth.
I did, for whatever it's worth. I looked up flag in Webster's, and the first definition was pretty generic. Piece of cloth with a design on it, usually intended to symbolize a country or some other institution. So I think bicentennial flag is not inaccurate.
They're not going to come after us for that. That's good to know.
Well, they might.
Well, you know, you can't ever tell. But this is only going to be, here's the catch on this. It's only going to be flying for a year.
That's right. It is a bicentennial banner.
Uh-huh. And so in 2018, it won't make any sense.
And Mississippi's bicentennial is in 2017.
Sure.
So yeah, this thing doesn't have a shelf life beyond, the bicentennial.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, really, I think this is intended to be kind of a sign of compromise, so you know everyone didn't
literally.
Right. I mean, so no one got exactly what they wanted. I think the majority of the council just preferred. We've got this policy that if you got more than one flagpole, state flag flies on one of them. Let's just stick with it. And then two of our council members were fairly insistent that the state flag did not need to be flown at the new police station.
Sure.
Which is located in a historic black neighborhood. And obviously the police department has been, we've seen some contention, particularly from the black community, with some concerns about the police department. So, you know, several of our council members who had voted in favor of the policy that more than one flagpole state flag goes on one of them, all of them came around. The vote was unanimous, so that kind of as a sign that they're willing to listen, even though they're not going to totally retract their previous position, they're going to put the bicentennial banner up.
It's good to see a unanimous vote from Tupelo City Council every once in a while. As you said, it will only be flying for a year. There are three poles, so do we get like a pirate flag on the third one? Or
the Jolly Roger?
Yes. I think the plan has always been that the City of Tupelo flag will fly on that one. And then, so we'll have U.S. flag in the middle, bicentennial on one for a year, then back to the state flag, and then the other one will be City of Tupelo.
I'm anxious to see in 2018 because the bicentennial plus one flag will be flying, and that's a good.
I think actually at least some council members are kind of keeping their fingers crossed that the legislature next session will just go ahead and change the flag, and then they won't have to worry about it at the end of the bicentennial. I mean, you know, the legislature has some pretty ambitious plans for next year, including, you know, potentially changing the education funding formula. I kind of think they're going to be a little too busy to bring the flag
out.
You
bought a year. You never know what's going to happen.
But you never know what's going to happen. I mean, crazy. Every time the legislature comes into session, stuff that no one was thinking about ends up coming up for a vote. So, I mean, who knows?
13 cities at this point at least have stopped flying the state flag, you mentioned in your story.
Indeed, yeah, including Oxford, Starkville, and Columbus. And then the Tupelo City Council does still plan to bring up for a vote a resolution that would be kind of a request to the legislature on behalf of the council to change the flag.
There you go. So we got a year to find out what happens now. instead of just ultimately deciding that the state flag will be flown at the police headquarters.
I mean, they basically just delayed. This delays their decision for a year, right? What this does,
and it keeps so that whenever the official like opening ceremony is, there'll be something a little more inclusive up on the flagpole, so that the actual like rollout of the new police headquarters won't be like a point of controversy. And I think they're kind of hoping in a year everyone will have forgotten about it, and they can just kind of slip the other flag back up there, and everyone will be used to the new police building. And
you can't please all the people all the time. Shoebird on our discussion forum said, I just spent 2 nights in a hotel there last weekend. I will find other accommodations on future visits. I will not spend any money in their town.
So. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, we said there. I didn't know if he was like sleeping in the police headquarters or what. When are we looking at the police headquarters opening now after the rain damage?
Well, that's a good question.
It wasn't rain; it was water. It was a sprinkler system.
Sprinkler system exploded, yeah. Derek.
Let's get it right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been hearing basically since August, oh, we're just about to move into this thing. I did. So the resolution that was approved last night says the bicentennial flag will fly beginning December 10th of this year. So Police Chief Bart Aguirre was there last night. So I asked him, Chief, should I take this resolution to mean that as of December 10th, you're expecting to be in the building? He indicated that the council may have just kind of picked that date just to have something to start with. But
it will be December 10th. It'll be December 10th, 2017 when they move in.
He indicated optimism that at least the moving process will have begun. But again, we've been hearing that for about 3 months now. He said they're still kind of wrangling with the insurance company over how much the insurance company is going to pay for of the damage that occurred as a result of the exploding sprinkler system.
Well, and then you got to worry about bringing black mold with you. So there's that, too.
Gosh, don't even say that, Derek.
Well, at least the exploding sprinkler system will take care of the black mold in high pressure. You know, it'll knock some of that out. So good information, Caleb. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Hey, be sure to watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. You can watch live Monday afternoons about 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. The 2016 legislative session is over, but Bobby continues to provide perspective about the news coming out of the state capitol. Time now for today's news memo, and for more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. Circuit Judge Bobby Chamberlain appears to have defeated attorney John Brady in a runoff for a state Supreme Court seat. Full results remained unavailable late Tuesday night, but Chamberlain led by about 3,500 votes, with almost all results reported. Severe weather across the region caused some counties to delay vote counting until today. As of late Tuesday, returns from Itawamba and Winston counties had not been reported. The Associated Press projected that Chamberlain would remain the winner once those votes are counted. Chamberlain has served for 12 years as a judge for the 17th Circuit Court District of Mississippi. He stressed that experience throughout the campaign and said he believes it will help him as he prepares for his new post. Chamberlain will replace the retiring Justice Anne Lamar for an 8-year term on the state Supreme Court.
Tupelo Mayor Jason Shelton is in Israel this week in an effort to foster international business development in Mississippi. The week-long trip is sponsored by the Mississippi Development Authority, which invited Shelton along. In a letter to the city council earlier this month, Shelton said the mission of the trip includes meeting with companies interested in doing business in the Magnolia State. The council approved Shelton's request to join the trip, and his travel expenses will be covered by the Tupelo Convention and Visitors Bureau. It's not the first time Shelton has done a little globetrotting. In November 2015, he joined TCVB representatives at the World Travel Market in London, where they promoted Elvis-related tourism.
The Bancor South Arena has announced that comedian Ron White will take the stage with his stand-up routine for mature audiences on Friday, April 21st. The show will begin at 8 p.m. White is best known for his performances with the Blue Collar Comedy Tour. He last appeared at the arena in 2015. Tickets go on sale for the event on Friday at 10 a.m. at the arena box office or through Ticketmaster.com. They range in price from $48 to $58. For more information, call 662-841-6528.
Hula hoops, trampolines, obstacle courses, and other activities help teach students about the importance of healthy hearts and lungs on Tuesday. The folks from HealthWorks visited Carver Elementary School. Lawhorn Elementary students also took part in the Circulation Celebration event. Part of its aim was to show students that exercise can be fun. Health Works brought massive inflatables, including a heart and lungs, for students to tour. Students were able to see each part of the organs and how they work. They also learned how to check their pulse before, during, and after exercising. The event was the culmination of a semester's worth of health lessons and activities provided by Health Works. The organization partnered with the Tupelo Public School District through a grant, allowing them to bring health education and events like Tuesdays to elementary schools across the district. By educating them early, teachers and Health Works staff members are hoping that students will develop and maintain healthy lifestyles and learn to enjoy exercise.
The Community Development Foundation broke ground on its third speculative building on Monday. The 100,000-square-foot facility will be located in the Tupelo Lee Industrial Park South. The building is part of a program that began 5 years ago to provide building shells for prospective companies to move into. This building should be finished by spring. CDF has also built buildings measuring 75,000 square feet and 50,000 square feet. The former is now occupied by Grammar, which announced in early 2014 that it would invest $30 million and add 650 jobs over 5 years. These spec buildings serve as lures for potential tenants, according to CDF President and CEO David Rumbarger. He says the 50,000-square-foot building at the North Lee Industrial Complex in Baldwin has attracted a lot of interest, but hasn't gotten a taker yet. I do want to remind you that today's episode of The Memo is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, a locally owned grocery store on East Main. The store recently changed its name from Palmer's, but the owners and the employees haven't changed. Damon Palmer and his brother Jason are the third-generation owners of the East Tupelo grocery store that was founded in 1957. The Palmer brothers have teamed up with last year's Grocery Wholesaler of the Year and decided to go with their Cost Plus program. The store now sells its groceries 10% over cost. That's allowed it to add more variety, especially in the meat, produce, and dairy departments. Along with the name change came a refreshing of the interior, new signs, and better parking. So visit Shoppers Value Foods for high-quality selection, great customer service, and low prices. It's Wednesday. That means it's Jenna Parsons Day. Talking food. Jenna, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
You wrote about Christmas cookies, but you didn't bring any. Tell you what, though. They look really good. Oatmeal toffee cookies. I'm not sure if I've had those.
Yeah, those have
I like
those,
oatmeal cookies.
Well, you know those, like a Heath bar, the little brickle bits, that's what goes in there that makes them... buttery and wonderful. A lot of people don't like oatmeal cookies. They're one of my favorite.
I do. I love those. You know what I love? Those Little Debbie oatmeal cream pies.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll eat those all day.
My son Patrick could eat a whole box.
Oh man. And I love just oatmeal in general. So you got those. You got the, of course, gingerbread cookies. That's a classic Christmas cookie.
Right. And, you know, as the picture shows, when you make gingerbread cookies, they don't have to be in the shape of gingerbread men.
Right.
With these, we did bells and stars, and you could do whatever shapes you want to do. Mittens.
Yeah. You got, I didn't know they were called this, thumbprint cookies. I've had them, obviously, but it's basically it's a kind of a small cookie with...
where you actually press down with your thumb and make a thumbprint and fill it with jam.
Yeah, with jam.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty basic, but they're very, very delectable. And then, of course, sugar cookies. You got to have sugar cookies. Decorated, of course.
Decorated. We, you know, every year I say I'm going to make time with the kids and we're going to decorate Christmas cookies, and we never did. And then one year we actually sat down and we made cookies and we decorated them, and they looked like something that a second grader might do. But that was okay because, you know, the icing was still good. And they were made with love and made from the heart. We took the really ugly ones to Scott Morris for Christmas. I'm not kidding. We really did.
That does not surprise me in the least. Wow. You can. You got the recipes in here and everything for these cookies. So, you know, tis the season.
I do, yes. This is the second or third year that we've done Christmas cookies.
Yeah.
Different ones. But they're fun to do if you can carve out some time. And if you don't have kids or grandkids, just, you know, go borrow the neighbor's kid.
Or just more for you.
Right.
Exactly. Your cook of the week is Margaret Hollingsworth, lives in Houston. She's from Houston. Been there a long time, and is the director of the preschool kindergarten at First Baptist Church, and is involved with some adult seniors as well. And she stays pretty busy, doesn't she?
She is amazing. She is 70 years young and has been working for 40 years with the kids.
Wow.
And then for 25 with the senior. The senior children, I guess.
That's what she calls them. The older youth is what the group
right
is
just
called.
Older youth. And she just she loves the church, she loves her God, and it shows in every aspect of her life when we went to interview her. We went into her office, and it looked like we were in a kindergarten classroom. I mean, books everywhere and just bright colors, and it was neat. It was a neat interview.
And apparently she has a bunch of cookbooks. She says, going back to the Confederacy.
Back to the Confederacy.
She's got some old cookbooks.
She does. Of course, she didn't have them there because we were in her office and not in her home.
Right, but still.
But yes, and her her oldest son, I believe, has challenged her to write a cookbook. And if she doesn't write it, she's got to pay him $5,000. So she says she's going to get on that book pretty soon.
She might want to do that soon. Wow, that's pretty cool. Our cook of the week.
She made a really neat something I never heard of before. It's called a Smith Island cake.
Yeah, it involves a Reese's peanut butter cups. I saw that as the first ingredient, so I'm all in.
It's an 8-layer cake, but each layer is thin, like I think it's called a torta, maybe, or tort.
I don't know.
Because if you look at the picture that's in the paper on the front of the food section today, the cake is not particularly a tall cake, but each layer is iced with chocolate, and then there are crushed Reese's and Reese's chunks on top. So, yeah, there you go.
Try not to drool on the mic. Okay, so
she made other things. She made cheese straws.
I don't care. I'm focused on this cake now. I'm focused on the cake.
Why don't you get Deanna to make that cake for you?
Who, Deanna, my oldest daughter? She doesn't really make cakes.
Oh, I thought she was into baking.
Nah, Charlotte is a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Deanna, I mean, I guess she can cook. I don't know. She's never cooked for me. We'll just get Lauren Wood to make one.
Yes, we could get Lauren.
She's our local cake maker. And then you had a column. It's about cabbage. I don't care for cabbage, but I guess you made it tasty somehow.
When's the last time you ate cabbage?
Never.
Then how do you know you don't like it?
Because it looks disgusting.
Well, now you're talking about white cabbage. This is red cabbage.
It's all cabbage is cabbage to me.
Okay, well.
This sounds gross.
For people who like sweet and sour, this has got brown sugar, and it's got vinegar, and it's got cabbage, red cabbage, red onion. Pretty dish.
It's got brown sugar? Okay, well, maybe then.
That's the sweet, and then the vinegar is the sour.
I got you.
Put it all together, and you got yourself a side dish.
Cool. All right. Well, you can read about that in today's food section, the Christmas cookies, cook of the week. It's a pretty packed section there, Jenna. Good stuff. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Until next time, I'm Derek.
What?
Oh,
is the show over?
Yeah, I was trying to leave.
Wow. Get somewhere to be?
Yeah, away from you.
I don't. I just got another podcast to do.
Well, I'm glad you don't have any other work to do today.
I do have other work to do today.
You just said you didn't have anything else to do but another podcast.
At this moment. Then after that, I'll have other stuff.
Mm.
Yeah.
Convenient.
I got some tweeting I got to do, some Facebooking.
Ooh, some tweeting. He's got some Facebook Live.
No Facebook Live, just Facebook
just
posting.
Just do a little bit. Yeah. Clear skies with Brad Locke.
No. No? Okay. Yeah. Hey, where can people find us, Derek?
Online.
Yeah, specifically.
Twitter.
Specifically.
Facebook.
We don't have a Facebook page for the memo, actually.
We have one for the Daily Journal.
We do. But
which is a great way to like us and find out when new stories are posted or breaking news.
True.
You can also do that at Twitter, @DJournalNow.
And you can follow the show on Twitter, @DJournalMemo.
That you can.
And you can stream us in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at memo.djournal.com.
Or however you're listening to us right now.
Yeah, pretty much. Tell your friends about us.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them to listen to those two cool guys.
You tell two friends, and then they each tell two friends, and then it's a pyramid scheme.
Can we do that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
What do you think I've been doing this whole time?
I'm on Twitter, @BradLock. Derek's on there, @WDerekRussell.
Mm-hmm.
Chris is on there, @ChrisKiefer.
That's it.
I probably tweet more than both of them combined, so I would just follow me instead. Don't worry about them. I'm just kidding.
You certainly like yourself.
No. I'm just trying to keep the masses informed and entertained best I can.
Keep the selfies coming.
Yeah.
Do it. Yeah. Maybe I'll take one after the show.
I don't doubt that.
I won't have time. You have to wait.
All right. Back on Thursday.
With
another rendition of Going Into Brad's Mind.
Also known as Brad's Birthday Eve.
See? So yours is on the 2nd?
What are you going to get me? What?
Righteous indignation. Yours is on the 2nd.
Yes, of December. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. All sure right. is. Okay. Great. We'll be back on Thursday.
I won't
then.
Be here.
What? That's right. It's your day off, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a holiday for Derek.
Yeah. I expect you to drive up here.
She likes you.
I expect you to drive up here just to tell me happy birthday.
I'm going to not do that. I'm going to go ahead and tell you now so you're not disappointed. I don't want you to sit around and wait on that all day.
Okay. Fine.
All right. Well, we'll be back. You can just tell me tomorrow.
That's probably not going to happen either, if I'm being totally honest.
Okay. Well, now I'm depressed.
That'd be okay.
All right. We'll see y'all next time. Thanks.